Hey everybody, welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Omaze. I am working with Omaze to put together an experience that is super cool that you can win. Right, get this. There is a thing called Adventure Drives. It's happening this summer in the Pacific Northwest. We're going to be driving 1,900 miles from Seattle to Jackson Hole on some of the most beautiful roads ever. I'm doing it. I'm driving a Lamborghini Urus, and you can win a trip. All expenses paid. We're talking about flights, hotels, meals, and a C8 Corvette to drive with a $1,000 gas card. That's what I'm talking about. Adventure Drives with me, brand new Corvette with a gas card. All of it is to benefit Team Rubicon, which is a fantastic charity. I highly suggest you take a look at what they do. They really help with disaster relief. They employ veterans in disaster relief scenarios, keeping them in action of sorts and using those skills acquired in the military as opposed to, you know, going back to being like an accountant or whatever. It's taking advantage of those untapped resources in a great way. And it's Rob Ferretti's deal. He's our old friend. And it's going to be awesome. Go to omaze.com/thesmokingtire. That's omaze.com/thesmokingtire to enter and win this fabulous trip. And every donation supports Team Rubicon. It's amazing. omaze.com/thesmokingtire. We are also brought to you by Auto Tempest. Listen, doesn't matter if you make a little bit of money for a living or a lot of money for a living, your time is worth money and you don't want to waste it, right? You know, it's one thing to be working. Work is okay. And to do work to find something you want is okay. But what you don't want to do is double work. And AutoTempest.com prevents you from doing double, triple, quadruple, quintuple work, right? All these used car sites, you got to enter the same search criteria over and over and over. You're digging through the same listings over and over because people, you know, they list cars in multiple places. Auto Tempest brings all of that to one place, right? You fill out one search field and it looks across the entire internet for the car you're looking for. Doesn't matter whether you're browsing or really looking to buy, checking out the market, or selling, Auto Tempest is there for you, and it helps you look nationally to find the best car for you. It compares those results with Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, and Auto Trader. It's an awesome, awesome, awesome site, and they've been with us for a long time. AutoTempest.com should be your first destination because it'll save you the most time, and therefore, it'll save you money before you even find the car. That's what I'm talking about, folks. All right, folks, on this episode, we are very fortunate to be joined by a Mr. Taro Koki. Taro is the executive producer and co-founder of GT Channel, which is a popular YouTube channel focused on drifting, JDM cars, stuff like that. But before he did that, he was the executive producer on a show called Best Motoring, which if you're into classic YouTube and classic JDM car shows, Best Motoring is one of the best car shows of all time. It basically featured crazy Japanese racing drivers, wheel-to-wheel racing press cars, and like amazing cars sometimes. And like it was an introduction into a bunch of the Japanese tuner cars that we didn't get in America. So we're going to be talking about all kinds of Japanese nerdery on the Smoking Tire Podcast with Taro Koki.
What up, everyone? It's the Smoking Tire Podcast. Are you all as exacerbated with me at this current situation right now? I had a crushing sense of doom all day today that actually was slightly improved by a turkey sandwich and a nap. A little bit, but it's you know, every day is a new mental struggle. But yeah, I don't know. We're staying I don't know. This is what we have right now, the podcast.
Yeah.
So welcome to it. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Before we get to Taro Koki, our guest, who is on the line, I want to say one funny thing I learned in the last 24 hours. I wrote the Porsche 992 Turbo S story for Road and Track and made the video. Go look at it on our site. And I'm currently driving a Miami Blue Macan Turbo parked outside the studio. Zach's got the video up right there, the 2021 992 Turbo S. Go watch it. There was a weird embargo time. It was like Tuesday at 3 p.m., which I don't think is ideal for our audience. Portia really needs to confer with us next time when when setting their embargo dates. But nevertheless, I was doing some homework, and I learned that in a quarter-mile drag race, Zach Clapman,
yeah,
the 2004 Porsche 996 Turbo X50, which by all accounts is a very fast car, it would lose to a 2020 Macan Turbo, both to 60 and in the quarter mile. Macan Turbo quarter mile, 12-2.
What?
12-2 for Macan Turbo.
Wow.
Yep. So think about that, folks, because I wrote an article basically that's 2,000 words on why the new Turbo doesn't really make any sense, because it's just way faster than you can use, and they sell one that's cheaper than that, that's still even faster than you can use, and we have the Macan, the crossover, is faster in a straight line to a quarter mile and 0-60 than the 2004 Porsche 911 Turbo X50. There you have it, folks.
Very cool.
Let's go to the phones and Taro Bienvenue, the masked villain. What up, brother? Can you hear us? What happened?
I don't know.
Taro, can you hear us? I can't hear you. What's going wrong?
Hey.
There we go.
There you are. What happened? Are we in real time?
I thought this was the proper attire for the day, you know, California and everything.
Are you in a grocery store? Are you broadcasting? What's the rule as of today? Grocery stores, right? We have to do the mask in the grocery store?
We gotta wear a mask to go out.
I think we need to start selling smoking tire masks. Capitalism, baby.
That might be a good idea.
This
is an old Scion racing bandana.
You know, I think people like you and I who spend time on racetracks are awfully prepared for this, because I've been going to the store straight up balaclava.
Yeah, exactly.
My wife's like, we have to wear masks to the store now. I'm like, I have the perfect tool. Do they need to be fireproof? Because I have that.
Just wear a helmet.
Over your head, too, and everything.
Taro, I need to see your face, brother. Let's look. Yeah, there he is. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be on the show.
Thanks for coming. Taro is a co-founder and owner of GT Channel, which is an aggregator and collector of tuner-focused Japanese car videos, among other things, drift videos and stuff like that. And you were the distributor of Best Motoring internationally, Hot Version, the best classic automotive content out of Japan ever. What's up? Hi.
Hey. Well, I know you're a big fan of Best Motoring Hot Version, so I'm really happy to be here today, and we can, you know, go back memory lane and kind of touch on the old good old Best Motoring days. And
well, people like, Best Motoring was one of the coolest car shows ever, because they did stuff that you just can't, I don't think you could get away with anymore today, like wheel to wheel racing press cars. How does something like that go down?
So Best Motoring started, I think it was like in, when did it start? Like,
I saw 87 is what I said.
87?
Yeah.
87? Well, originally, so there was a car magazine called Best Car in Japan. They still have it. And so it was published by a company called Kodansha. And Best Motoring is basically the video version of Best Car. So the guys at Best Car said, hey, we should go, you know, while we're at the tracks and everything, we should just start shooting some videos, and it was kind of like a add-on to the magazine for a while.
Were they doing the wheel-to-wheel racing for the magazine?
No. Oh, okay. No. At the beginning, they were just like, you know, simple driving impressions, not even at the tracks. You know, it was just like driving around Hakone or, you know, scenic routes, basically.
What it is like Best Car and Best Motoring, is that as corny in Japanese as it is in when you translate it into English? It's a normal sounding name for something in Japan, right?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those English things, you know. It's like, it's Best Car is like, combine two words together, Best Motoring, and you know, you have a product.
That's usually how you name YouTube channels now, actually.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's true. It's good SEO.
The best name.
So at what you got involved in what the year 2000, right? So sort of the midpoint of the production of that series, which ended for good in, I think, 2011.
Yeah.
How did you become involved?
We had a business at that point already. We had a website actually that basically told it pop culture, Japanese pop culture. We wrote about and shot photos about Japanese pop culture, and the automotive section was the most popular section. And two of the guys that I used to work with, Katsu and Masa, who are now the founders of Built by Legends. I don't know if you've heard about these guys, but
I have not.
Anyways, they came to me and said, "Hey, there's this thing called Best Motoring, and we should get the rights." And at that time, I was kind of away from the automotive scene. I was like living in South America, and I was kind of like, not really following automotive that much. And Best Motoring kind of got me back into cars. So we went over there and said, "Hey, you guys have something really special. Can we do the English versions?" And to be honest with you, we had no idea what we were doing. we've done some translation work, but we've never done any type of video production at all. And you know, back in the day, you needed to go into a studio to do anything, like even graphics and voiceovers, and
until like 2005, it was crazy expensive to do anything on video. Like me and my friend Larry Casilla made like a video in 06 or 07, and we needed a real helicopter for it. Like we needed a camera that had like shot cassettes I'd never fucking seen before. I had to do like thousands of dollars in transcoding. Like it was like craziness.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were the early days of Best Motoring, we literally had to use PowerPoint and like print out the subtitles.
That's
and
fucking they would scan it's like South right? Parking the subtitles.
Right. I mean, it was crazy. And, there were no GoPros back then. You know, it was like everything was shot professionally.
Yeah.
And we would get the master tapes and, we would start by translating everything. Write everything up and then translate it and then write, a stack of like papers, like little, we'd like have to like print out these pieces of paper with the subtitles so they can scan it. And
wow. It's like so OG lower thirds.
Yeah, it really is.
It's literally like South Park incredible. Cutting out paper. It's very crazy. Were you?
That's
did
how
you?
OG I am.
Did you get involved in any of the production of the series once you became the distributor? Did you only collect shot footage, really?
No. We anytime they went overseas, so our relationship grew, and so I would, we would be invited to the shoots, obviously. So when we could go, we'd go, and anytime they would go overseas, we would be like the coordinating producers for them. So. Sam Mitani,
he was on our show last year. Yeah, good dude.
Yeah, exactly. So we arranged that we produced that one. And when the hot version came over with Tsuchiya-san to do the American Toge series, we did all of that on stateside.
Yeah, the American Toge series too. Yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, look at the snow one. I love this picture Zach just found of like snow rally cross and press cars.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. Yeah.
Same circuit.
No, that was crazy.
It's wild. Why? How? What was it about the Japanese, like, was it the culture, the production of the TV? Like, why was it totally okay for them to like straight up be racing these cars? They in America, that shit just won't fly.
Yeah. So, it started from a magazine and it went over to, so they were legit, moto journalists, right? At Best Car. And then they branched off. The president was actually the same guy and he hired a bunch of dudes to do the video version at Best Motoring. And so the first thing they did was like, okay, we're gonna, if we're driving this on video and we're being shot on video, we can't, half-ass anything because they're gonna see that we're like kind of half-assing it. So it just became this thing where, you know, if we're going to take it on the track, we're going full blast, guys. And the manufacturers kind of were cool with that. They're like, okay. And they kind of got on board because Best Motoring and Best Car helped sell a lot of cars in Japan. So it was already a respected a media outlet. So when the video started and they were like, you know, we're going to take these cars out and battle them, you know, full blast on the track, manufacturers was like, okay, you know.
Well, if you know, I mean, I can see some manufacturer's perspective as, okay, so this is a, you know, it's a marketing expense, it's a press car, and you know, these are professionals, and if it gets written off, you know, all right, that's the cost of doing business, I guess. But like, you know, there's episodes of the show where you see F40s and Diablos and shit. I cannot imagine Ferrari is getting on board with an F40 in Best Motoring.
Yeah. You know, so those are the ones that we really had to work hard to get. So the Japanese cars were cool, and some of the European car manufacturers, the branches in Japan, were cool with lending us cars. But you know, Ferrari, you know, for example, I mean, Lamborghini, I mean, all these guys, we had to borrow them from regular owners.
That's imagine an owner letting you rent wheel to wheel race their fucking F40. That's just nuts.
So the insurance was just like, it was just like crazy.
Oh, you could get a policy for that, huh?
Yeah. So we'd get it just for the day. So they would get it just for the day. And they told me about it. But, you know, I've heard some crazy stories about, you know. Yeah.
Wait, and you guys, did you always start the slower cars in front so that the faster cars would move up through that pack? And so therefore, I mean, it makes the race more interesting and fair, but it also means whoever's car is in front, like, they're going to be encountering more vehicles than if they had started at the back. So, you know, if it's private owners, you have to be like, by the way, 8 cars are definitely passing you because your car is slower.
Yeah, it wasn't, we called it reverse grid, you know, but
yeah,
it wasn't always like that, though. Sometimes it was just, you know, you do the fast cars go up front and they'd run away. But since the battles were so short, you know, there were only like 3 or maybe 5 laps, you know, at most. Yeah. So in order to get as much excitement out of the battles, you know, they would do the reverse grid. And also, just going back to the manufacturers, the fact that these were all professional race car drivers in the battle, that gave them a little bit of, you know, peace of mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, like Gansan, Motoharu Kurosawa, the older gentleman. So he was actually a Honda factory developing driver. He was a test driver for Honda. So they were cool with Gansan going out with the NSX or, you know, any of the Honda cars.
Right. So you got to shuffle the guys who's in what car depending on. So, all right, well, this dude can.
So if you watch Best Morning for a long time, you'll see that Gansan is usually in an NSX during these battles. You know, like Nakaya is always in a Mitsubishi because he was a Mitsubishi test driver.
Interesting.
They kind of like, you know, chose their guy, you know.
I think and a couple of things that really stand out to me from that show is it introduced me as an American to a lot of the brand name Japanese tuners, mm-hmm. like Veilside and HKS and a bunch of the guys that had, you know, these kind of complete builds. I really, you know, watching this like tuner Skyline like battle, like he pulled it up. What was that, a Silvia or something?
It was Veilside.
Veilside Supra battling an F40. I mean, that's like, oh shit, that's a, you know, David Goliath kind of thing. I might have seen RWB for the first time on Best Motoring, maybe. And definitely HKS for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that was really interesting. And I also think that they did such a good job. It might have been the translations and like, or it might have been because it was the guys were like yelling at each other while racing, but I thought the racing drivers, like, really their personalities came through, even though I had like no idea what they were saying half the time.
Yeah,
it was so great.
We tested a lot with that too. Like at the beginning, we used voiceovers for the race car drivers as well, but in order to get the full excitement of them yelling at each other, we started subtitling the drivers and only using VO for the narrator. And funny enough, we used the Iron Chef guy. I don't know if you guys
noticed that. Yeah, what's that guy's name? I forget that dude's name, the Iron Chef narrator guy. Yeah. That's very funny.
Yeah, so we...
No, subs, dudes, subs over dubs. Always. Subs over dubs, for sure.
It was so great just seeing, like, the drivers were clearly having a good time. And if, you know, one guy passes the other guy, because they're in mismatched cars, and they would kind of talk about the car they're in, and be like, he has way more top end. And you'd see, like, the racing glove gesture and the head tilt, and you kind of just knew how this guy was feeling. And then he'd get him in the next corner, and they were always having a good time. And sometimes they'd comment on the car's pros and cons a little bit, but it was more about just like watching it and watching all these experts drive the cars as fast as possible. And did that give you guys some freedom where you're like, look, we're not going to really comment on the pros and cons of each car. We're just going to drive them and let them speak for themselves. Did that make manufacturers more comfortable?
I think they were just naturally, you know, race car drivers more than anything else. So we left like the impression of each car to the driving impression part, where before the battle starts. So if we do like a full feature on a car, if it's a brand new, all new car, you know, they'd take it out to see somewhere street driving or Hakone or whatever, and they'd get done with all of the...
They didn't make that shit on the highlight reel. Yeah, us, we didn't... 20 years later, we're like skipping over that. We're like, yo, just show me the race, bro. Cut to the toge battle. we don't watch the actual like reviews, Zach. We just watch the silliness.
That's kind of true.
What was some of the sillier ones you put together?
Well, I mean, I think the craziest one that, you know, well, there are a couple crazy stories, but like when we tried to get the McLaren F1, this is
wow.
I mean, there's like an incredible, you know, feat that they even got the car. Hattori, one of the drivers, was a Tag Heuer driver, right? So he's a sponsored Heuer driver. And Tag Heuer bought a car to promote their watch and kind of like the relationship. And they brought it to Japan.
I never heard about that. The Tag Heuer's owned car, huh?
Yeah. Hattori was like, okay, I think I can bring this car out to, you know, to Tsukuba. And McLaren was very wary about the whole idea of, you know, taking it out on the track and, you know, going door to door with these guys that they've never heard of. In the end, they actually okayed it, and we were able to get it. But, you know, do you guys know Roger Yaskawa, the IndyCar driver? So
I don't believe
Roger's
so, no.
father. Yeah, so Roger's father was the head McLaren guy in Japan at the time. So it was up to him to okay or not, and he finally okayed it, and we were able to get the car for the show.
The relationship between Tag and McLaren is very interesting, and it resulted in most recently those Lanzante Porsches, which are these sort of 930 Porsches that have the Tag Formula One Turbo F1 engines that went in the McLaren F1 cars. And it's the same, the F1 Lanzante. Has anyone ever actually driven one of these fucking things? Have you seen these things, Taro?
No. But that relationship goes back, oh my God.
So Tag was working, Tag's Turbo V6 is a Formula One engine that fits in a 930 Turbo, and they found a bunch of them somewhere. I don't know how many there were, but they're selling these things now, and you basically get an engine stand for your potentially Grand Prix winning engine, but the engine stand happens to be a fucking 930, and I think you can drive it. Oh, so yeah, they give you this, look at this chassis plate they pull up. So here's your engine and all the shit it won.
So this says chassis, Niki Lauda 84, Niki engine Lauda. 34. And then it has the history of the races and the finish. Like, you know, 84 Britain, Niki Lauda first. That's a good, that's a nice engine.
Yeah, so Porsche built the Tag F1 engines, I believe, that went into the McLaren Formula One cars. And so, yeah, you can get one of these things now if you want to be very silly to take a left into left field there. But it's an interesting relationship between Tag and McLaren that I don't believe still exists anymore. But did that, what do they race that thing against in the battle, Taro?
I don't remember. I mean,
Zach found the video.
Probably out there somewhere.
Zach found.
I think I did.
Is this just the road test, or is that the actual battle? I don't know. It seems like it exists. It's in 4x3. It's from 1994.
Right.
Yeah. No. That's it. There's someone mobbing it on the track. Oh yeah.
I'm trying to scrub ahead to see what they raced it against.
Oh, it looks like. Oh yeah. Here's a race that has like. Is it kind of regular cars?
This looks like a pretty. This is a 45-minute episode, so it might be a montage of like race cars in the McLaren F1.
Oh,
I'm not sure, but people can find it. But you know, you guys would have roofs out there, F40s, and then you'd have like, you know, the tuner series was awesome to watch, like HKS versus Valeside versus, and then like STI versus Evo versus. I mean, you never saw that stuff here then or now. You really?
Yeah, the STI versus Evo battles were legendary. I mean, that the whoever won that month, I mean, it really reflected the sales of like the following month.
Wow. So, that's awesome.
Mitsubishi and Subaru, like they were like, they came really prepared. I mean, all their cars were like, you know, they were, I mean, some, it's funny because it's all public now, but one time Nissan really messed up because Tsuchiya was driving a R33 GTR. I don't know if you guys have heard of this story, but you know, it was like awesome, right? And he's like, this car is badass, it's awesome, you know. And he bought one. I think he actually bought one. And then he realized that the car that he was driving on Best Motoring was like
oh no, it was a ringer.
I knew where you were going already.
Oh no. Yeah.
And he was so upset about that.
Yep.
It's funny. I mean, it's like on Wikipedia in Japanese, but
that's hilarious. Yeah, they sent a ringer out. Yeah,
like,
that's a good.
Everybody away, right? And she was like, "Man, this is the best car I've ever driven." You know, and he goes out and buys one. And it's like, what the fuck's going on here?
Oh my god, that's funny. I bet that's happened elsewhere in the automotive journalism world. I mean, one of my favorite Chris Harris stories that he told in the podcast is that his mother wanted just a nice fun to drive station wagon to take her big dogs out in, and so he goes out on some local like used car place and buys this Audi S4 Avant for his mother, and about a couple of weeks later it's kind of acting up and acting weird and not driving right, and he all of a sudden gets a sense of familiarity about the car, and it turns out it was the very same press car that he beat the absolute balls off of like 3 years before. He was drifting it. He completely smoked the diff, and he bought his own press car. But oh yeah, Zach pulled up. Zach also pulled up the story, the legendary Chris Harris Jalopnik story, where he called out. What year was that? 12?
2011.
2011. He called out Ferrari for their press car ringers.
They would show up, you know, quote prepared or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just putting your best foot forward.
Did you have manufacturers on Best Motoring show up with like full, you know, full teams and transporters, and they have their chassis guys and?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen whole teams arrive with the cars.
They take that shit really seriously, man.
Oh yeah, I mean the chief engineer would sometimes show up. just to make sure that everything's running fine, you know.
I bet.
Yeah.
Sometimes he won't even be on camera, but you know, a lot of times they would, you know, come on camera too, and we'd interview them. But they'd show up even without you know, an appointment for them. Just come along.
Shit, this guy's really here, huh?
I mean, we've been to car tests where there's no wheel to wheel racing. Sometimes it's time. Sometimes it's just a track day.
Yeah.
And they'll send an engineer just to make sure the car is set up well, because they want your impression of the car to be as good as possible. Now just imagine if it's like, this is a national TV show and it's racing
it's a race.
Five cars.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Gosh. The and I also, what, you know, my other favorite thing about Best Motoring is just how it introduced us Americans to the weird, you know, JDM only versions of cars, you know, the Tommy Mack and Evo, the Subaru Type RA and all this shit that, like, maybe you saw in a magazine or maybe you saw in Gran Turismo or whatever, but it's like there's a real car being driven by a real guy. Like, that this is a real thing, you know. That was very important too.
Right. So, like, a lot of the cars that, you know, the U.S. viewers only saw in, like, Gran Turismo or, you know, Best Motoring had all those cars, right?
Yeah.
Like, the Type Rs, even, like, you know, Type Rs and, like you said, the STIs and special version, the tuner versions. These were all in you can either see them in Gran Turismo or in the game or on Best Motoring. And that was the only place you really got to see these cars, like, being flogged, you know.
Yeah, and it's like perfect for our time now, because now it's like people our age, like, you know, me and Zach are late 30s, and, you know, the people like us, we can import these cars. Mm-hmm. We can buy them. Like, ooh, shit. Yeah. So it's actually like a pretty good reference, you know, to go back.
Yeah. So I was over at Top Rank, you know.
Sean. Yep. He sold me both my right-hand drive cars. Yeah, he's the man. Yeah. Top Rank Importers, go to importavehicle.com. If you're in California or anywhere in America, they have a lovely inventory right now.
Yeah, those guys are, you know, they know what they're doing, and they do, you know, things the right way. And, you know, all the cars that we drove back in the day are, you know, even the R33 from January this year, you know, you can import it.
Yeah, you know, I've been meaning to go give Sean a visit. I told him, I said, the next R33 GTR you have coming in that doesn't already have an owner, I'd like to come take it for a day and go play. I haven't driven an R33 before. Have you driven all three generations?
Yeah, I have.
What's your favorite Skyline generation?
I think I like the R34.
Uh-huh.
It's just because I'm in love with, like, the Mines tuned R34 GTR, you know. But I like R32s as well. The 33 is just not my kind of thing. It's kind of like a lot of people, I think. It's kind of, you know, heavy and not as agile as the R32. It's not as you know, menacing as R34.
I think I'm with you on that, even though I admittedly have not driven a 33 and would like to have a go. But I owned a 32, and it was 80% of the way to a 34. It was really, except for the sixth gear and the power, it felt very similar to the 34. The 34 had, like, you know, better air conditioning and shit, but and it was like a nicer thing. But, like, it was, you can get pretty close to the feel of a 34 with a nicely sorted and mostly stock 32.
Did they change, like, the computers and diffs and things much between those two generations? Were there a lot of updates to that kind of stuff?
Taro, do you know? I mean, I think they definitely updated stuff, but I don't know if there's updated. Go ahead.
It's updated, but it's basically the same setup, though, you know, hardware-wise. And the computer's completely, you know, different, but it uses the same all-wheel drive system, same engine, you know.
They just added the sixth gear, and the ratios are a little different for the 34, but, like, the overall experience of driving the two cars is really, really similar. They're those things are so nice. They're just such nice cars.
Yeah. I got to get one of those from Sean one of these days.
Yeah. What do you got? What are you driving these days?
I'm a family man. I'm a surfer. I drive a 4Runner now.
Okay. Yeah, 4Runner's cool. I get the truck life. I get it.
Yeah.
So tell us about GT Channel.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we were just over at Sean's house shooting some videos about GTR to the U.S. This year, we're going to be ramping up our production a little bit. You know, we did this merger and IPO in London, so... I've got some funds to create some fun stuff this year, so I'm really looking forward to that. But this virus thing kind of put a hold to everything. But we're planning on releasing a whole bunch of new stuff.
Yeah, it would have been a good time to have, like, a big backlog of content, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know.
We're very lucky that we still have the the press cars trickling through, but unfortunately. I had some very exciting press cars that were canceled and press launches that were canceled. And so we still have nice stuff to drive, but it's not the heavy hitters that we were looking forward to. But I suppose we should count our blessings that we are still working at all, huh?
Yeah. So we'll be Sam Mitani and James McKeon from No Breaking. We have a little podcast going on every month, but we're going to be ramping that up to every other month now because we're just sitting at home, you know? So that's why I was asking those questions.
About Wirecast?
The Wirecast.
Yeah. No, I mean, if Wirecast works, there's other ones too, but Wirecast mm-hmm. works. Everyone's got their own sort of methods. We've done the additive method. We started with just sound and then video and then the live and then, you know, it really kind of,
right.
It's just cumulative.
I've always been all video. So, oh yeah, there you go. So, yep. You know, I always want to go live and I always want to do video. And
I know.
Sam and James are like, well, let's just record this on Zoom first. And
yeah, no, your first couple, definitely don't try and balance the live all at once. You'll fucking lose your head. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you did you have a favorite driver when you were working on Best Motoring? Did you vote for somebody or was it just kind of like just watch what happens and smile?
You know, I like Gonsan a lot. He's a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. I heard, so I met him. I met him this winter when I was in Japan for the Tokyo Motor Show. I bumped into him and he's like 78 years old. And they were telling me they went to Nürburgring a couple of years ago, just like maybe 2016. They did kind of like this Best Motoring revival, you know, one-off DVD. They went to Nürburgring and they had Gonsan, you know, drive a 911 GT3 and AMG GTR at Nürburgring. And, you know, since he was like maybe 76 at the time, they brought a couple, you know, drivers out there, you know, to take it out to Nürburgring, you know. Like, okay, well, Gonsan, you can just be, you know, the man and just hang out and reminisce about, you know, the good old days. And once they got there, he was like, you know, I think if the old race car driver, you know, blood started boiling.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, let me go give it a shot, you know. So he gets in and, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, they were telling me that he clocked like the same time as the younger dudes.
Yeah.
He was just out there. Yeah.
It comes out, you know, they put it, they push it down, you know, and then they get to the racetrack and they, you know, they smell the race gas and the rubber and it's like Popeye with the spinach. It fucking comes right back.
Yeah.
Zach and I went to film something at Bondurant School in Arizona, you know, and Bob Bondurant's 80, 79, 80, you know, and we're filming and we just hear like, and some like ZR1 is doing like drift laps. And we're like, what the fuck is that? And it comes over and there's Bob getting out. He goes, I like to keep my reflexes up. And he's out there fucking mobbing.
Still fast.
You know, he could go down at any second, but he is going to go down at 100 miles an hour when he does, man. That guy.
Yeah. Those guys, I mean, you can't discount them just because they're old, man. They get in the car and they'll just destroy it, you know?
Totally.
So much respect for those guys.
So what are some of your favorite things that you've done on with GT Channel? Have you guys done some must-see content that I'd need to spend my quarantine watching?
Well, I mean, I think you should see some of the recent stuff. We have a new show out called The Tuner Club. Well, it's in our fourth season now, but we're shooting everything in Japan this year.
Oh,
so the Stradale Tuner Club, that's a new one that we've that we just released. It's a little tuner shop, a Honda tuner shop in Gifu. The first episode we did it on Garage Yoshida. They are a badass GTR tuner out in Nara. They're in the middle of nowhere, but all the best GTR tuners send the cars over there to get their he builds full cars too, but you know he does work for like Autech, you know, for Nissan.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Autech. Yeah. Oh yeah. Is there a new any crazy trend that's happening in Japan that we have just no idea about yet over here? Or has the internet pretty much ruined any secrets that are going on in Japanese tuner shops by now?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you go to, you know, Daikokufuto and you kind of can see the trend. But, you know, they say that, you know, car culture is kind of dying off, but I don't think so, though. You know, there are plenty of fun things going on, you know, in the tuner world. There are, you know, guys like at Ebisu drifting, you know, the grassroots thing is pretty strong.
I think it's getting a little more specialized, you know, the manufacturers are building more egg-like vehicles, but then that leaves, you know, room for highly specialized stuff like Exocets and Atoms and, you know, crazy tuner cars and race cars and drift cars and stuff like that. So I think that'll probably keep us going for a while.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there, you know, you go to Tokyo Auto Salon, and it's still, you know, it's still happening. You got the, you know, OG guys that are just like into every little detail. And then you got the, you know, the body, you know, guys that, you know, just do all the flashy stuff, but you know, it's all, you know, quality stuff. And then you have kind of like the VIP, you know, the kind of the Yakuza car looking ones. Have you ever been to the Tokyo Auto Salon?
I haven't. I've seen lots of pictures. It seems crazy.
Oh my God.
I really want to see someone like Bosozoku shit. That's that, like, yeah. I want to see some stuff that's like crazy vans.
We should go and like shoot something together in Japan.
I would love to. We went to Japan just to film a drive on NBC Sports, but like I think we were only there for like 4 days. We were working super long days. I mean, it was really cool. I definitely enjoyed being there, but I could spend a month in Tokyo easily.
Yeah.
And I'd love to. Tokyo Auto Salon looks nuts. What is that?
This may be a dumb question, but is Tokyo Auto Salon like SEMA, or is SEMA like Tokyo Auto Salon? Like the photos I'm looking at right now, I think you're seeing.
Yeah, so it's like the SEMA show, but just focusing on JDM stuff.
Got it.
Is it also it's like the Geneva show plus SEMA? Is there like a regular part of it, or is it tuner stuff?
No. It's just tuner stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, so it is like a Japanese SEMA. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That I would really like to see. I want to see the craziest shit that they can come up with over there.
Yeah, no, this is the place to go. If you want to really get to see all the Jap, and you know, they're you know, it's not just the flashy stuff. You know, there are all the legit shops. They have booths and you know, new technology. Even the manufacturers, they all have booths there as well.
So I think that goes on the list, I think, for the trip. The pictures that Zach is scrolling through right now are pretty awesome. I mean, it looks real. It looks like there's some really wild and weird stuff, and I like it.
Yeah, only like, you know, the tip of the iceberg from this show makes it out to the SEMA show.
Yeah.
Like
No, but what about Saudi, bro? What about the Saudi SEMA?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about I'm not sure about that one. Maybe they just, you know, everybody goes out there for that one. But
no, we're not going to the Saudi SEMA, dude. No, thank you. Pass. Hard pass.
Yeah, but you know, the SEMA show is like only the top Japanese tuners that have the funding to bring their cars and even, you know, sell parts in the US make it out to the SEMA show. So you know, there are millions of guys in Japan that don't even sell internationally. You know, they're just kind of like a mama papa, and they just run their own thing.
Really?
And yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but like, I'm trying to be like, what do I want to like? I want to go over there and scour for parts. Let's find some of these mom and pop shops.
Tell you what, scour for, you buy GTR air conditioning units because you can't rebuild those here.
Yeah. That's my Skyline purchasing advice. Make sure the air conditioner works, because it's really hard to get Skyline air conditioners fixed in America.
Yeah.
You can build a 1,000 horsepower Skyline engine way easier than you could get your air conditioning fixed here. Trust me, I tried. What is that? Is that a Lexus?
Yeah, that's a...
Wow. Zach, pull that picture up. Whatever the fuck that is. Super GT, or is that even a real race car? Is it a concept car?
It's like an LC500 in there somewhere. But
that's
awesome. That is mostly canards super and flares.
Super GT car.
That's awesome. I love
inspired,
that.
Inspired, maybe? I'm not sure.
It's Lexus's own car. It's a LC500 Super GT race car in full carbon.
It looks fucking so cool, man. Yeah. LC500s, by the way, rule. That's a really, really overlooked, awesome, awesome car. Have you fucked with one of those yet?
No, I haven't.
Call Lexus, get one.
James has driven one on for our show, and he did a review on them, but he loved them.
I've done like 1,200 miles in them. Oh, it's the best. They're so good. I think they just came out with a convertible, right? That's an excuse to go. Book it. Let's book the 500 convertible for sure.
I really like your show on GT Channel, My Drift Challenge, where it's like someone who has a drift car that they've built, then they go out to Willow Springs, and it's them versus pros, but their car,
which
is really interesting. It's like, so you see a person who built the car and loves the car, and like they drive the hell out of it, and then they give it to like James Dean or somebody else, and then their line is perfect. But it's a really cool competition because it's kind of like one person has all the inside knowledge of how that car works, and the other person is amazing.
Wait, so they both drive the guy's one car? Oh, all right. Sorry. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I like that.
It's really cool.
And it's literally like put professional in your baby, and he just gets to beat the shit out of it. Oof, that's tough.
Yeah.
And we give them only 3 runs to practice too. So the pro only gets like 3 runs, like really like no practice ever. So he has to get into this like beat up 240 that this kid drove, all the way from Canada. And, Matt Powers was our guy for that episode. But he has to go in there and compete with him. And, the guy knows the kid from Canada or wherever, he knows his car inside and out. He built it himself. So this one was the one with Teddy with the R32 Skyline.
Who's better? I like this challenge because it's like, does the guy who knows the car, is he going to kill it? Or the guy that's super good at driving, can he just get in anything and kill it?
Yeah, like how quick can the pro adapt?
Yeah.
Because we know some pros that, or especially if they're precision drivers in movies, like they need to be able to learn a car quickly and be able to get that slide and hit that mark and stuff, but not everyone can do that. It's a really special skill to have, even if you are a pro racer or drifter or something.
And then you've got sometimes these people who build their own car who have never driven like a good car. Like they don't know what, Taro, like when we were filming our show Tuned for Drive, there'd be people that would build this crazy thing. And I go, I'd see the thing they built and I'd go, other than this, what is the fastest thing you've ever driven? And it would be nothing. like there was a guy who built just this bonkers Corolla. It was like a 1975 Corolla with a supercharged 1UZ in it, and it was Mad Max as hell. And he had literally never driven any sports car of any kind besides this. So he had absolutely no idea what good was.
How a car is supposed to perform.
Right. Like, and so here I go.
A journalist who's never been in a performance car. He's not a race car driver. He's never been in a fully set up car. So he has no idea.
Right.
He has no standard.
Zach has pulled up the video so you can see the car. It was here's the most shocking thing about it. And I mentioned this car specifically, not because I was surprised at how bad it was, but because I was surprised at how good it was. This guy was either a savant of savants or just the luckiest dude on earth that happened to build something that landed right smack dab in the middle of awesome. But I just think it's very interesting, especially to go back to your show, what if we put the guy who built that car in, a stock 240 or whatever, something that would be easy to slide, but is like not his car,
Yeah.
That actually would be a fun, like Mythbusters style twist to the end of that show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you flip it. Yeah. Like, put you in something normal and see how you do.
Yeah, like you just get like a stock Camaro SS or something and then put both drivers in the Camaro and be like, now let's see, I think that could be an interesting twist.
Yeah.
You can have that one for free, buddy.
the pro has won every single episode, though.
Ah, so I guess we do know the answer to that. Yes. All right.
They just have their width of driving different cars and knowledge is just so much of an advantage.
Yeah.
Like, as you say, these guys have never driven any high performance car most of the time. Right.
Yeah.
So they only know their car. So, it's their sweet spot is so small, compared to like these drivers that can drive anything really well.
Well, it's a snowball effect. I mean, the more experience you get, the quicker you adapt, and the quicker you adapt, the more experience you get, and round and round and round and round and round. When I first started driving, when I was like in high school, I used to think that some stick shift cars were very easy and other stick shift cars were very hard. Like, nah, mm-hmm. not really. You just need to adapt to like how, where does this go and how fast? And the more you do it, the easier you can adapt. Not so hard, but I'm not surprised the pro won. That's that's a good bit of data.
Have you had a someone bring a car out with hand controls yet? That might be an interesting twist.
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, like because you know, like Chair Slayer, if you brought his car out, that would be interesting to see if a pro can adapt to that. You know, I know that Forsberg did it with him a couple years ago, and it was really interesting to watch them try to connect those wires, like hands to brain instead of feet to brain.
That would be interesting. Well, I mean, for some drivers, you know, just going from left-hand drive to right-hand drive is difficult. So if hand controls, I'm sure it's a whole new.
Yeah.
You ever drive a car with hand controls, Taro?
Huh?
You ever try it? Hand controls?
No.
It's not that hard, actually. It's,
really?
Yeah, mentally it's hard, but actually the mechanics of it are not that hard. I mean, I don't know about Chair Slayers, he's got some crazy custom deal, but I've driven a regular sports car that has basically just a lever, and you pull it for gas and you push it for brake, and it's actually not that hard. You get it's actually fairly easy to get used to. Yeah. What's hard is you don't really think about it when you're driving normally, but like literally keeping tension on a lever. Imagine driving for an hour. And the whole time you have to keep tension on this lever. That's a muscle group you're not really thinking about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, our legs get a little tired after a long drive from holding your foot in that position. So imagine your hand isn't used to it.
Yeah, the best thing to ever happen to paraplegics in cars is radar cruise control. Radar cruise control is like a game changer if you're rocking hand controls.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. It looks like we have a lot of questions. Do you have questions for Taro?
We got a few. Yeah, we'll go through just his questions. Jonathan Casco says, Taro, do you think that Best Motoring will be able to stay active going digital only since you guys stopped DVD sales?
Well, they stopped the Japanese production back in 2011.
11, I think, is what I saw on Wikipedia.
Yeah, so all the things that you're seeing on YouTube right now on the Best Motoring channel is that's all old archive stuff. So if we want to revive it, yes, definitely it'll come, you know, only on digital. Although on Amazon Prime in Japan, you can still see new hot version.
Oh, really? They're still making it? New content?
Yes. Every other month. So what happened was when they stopped production in Japan, the former editor of Hot Version started up his own gig, and he went to Kodansha and got the rights to create new episodes. And he's been at it. So there are new episodes of Hot Version still out on Amazon Prime in Japan. I'm not sure if you can find any in the US, but I know in Japan.
Can you get old Hot Version or old Best Motoring on Amazon Prime? That would be awesome.
Well, on the Best Motoring channel on YouTube, you can find the old ones.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, look, is that say get it on? Looks like
get it for a dollar.
Get it for a dollar on Amazon Prime.
You get
Hot
Version for a dollar on Amazon Prime.
All right,
there you go.
Yeah, available.
Some of those are ours too, like the American Toga. Those are old episodes are ours. Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think it would be possible to do a modern Best Motoring in America? Like, if we went to networks, could we sell that? Would anyone insure that? Would manufacturers participate in that?
I don't know, but that would be something that I would love to, you know, get going.
That's my fucking dream, dude, to start that show again in America.
I know.
It's my dream, bro. It would be so great. We could get the funniest drivers out there. I mean, we know all of them. It would literally be people that, like, it would just be our fucking friends. It would be like Turk and Forsberg and Lee Keen and like four other people that we know that are hilarious, and they just scream at each other and race cars, dude. We should really.
Well, we can mix it up with the original Japanese guys too.
I mean,
we can,
be we can great.
Fly a couple of them out here, and
Great.
Of course,
be down with it.
Absolutely.
Tsuchiya, Orito's, you know, still young. Taniguchi, he loves coming out here too.
Yeah, they're still in the game.
Yeah.
What else you got, Zach?
Taro, do you have a craziest toge battle story, or just like, do you have a favorite shoot or a favorite story from the series?
I think the one that we were involved in and kind of comes to my mind is when we shot Senna. So this was before my time, obviously, when we shot Senna, but Senna was in Japan for the F1 Grand Prix in Japan, and Honda had him out at Suzuka to test drive and show the press the new NSX Type R. And the Best Motoring crew was asked to film this because they were the only guys in town that knew how to shoot cars, you know, in a professional way at the time still.
Is this the heel toe video? Is this the Senna heel toe video?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit. This is like the most famous video ever.
Yeah, so we shot that. Well, the Best Motoring crew shot that, and we had the archives. And this was in about 2000, when we started creating the English version. The Senna Foundation contacted us and said, "Hey, you know, we've heard about this, you know, unicorn of footage of Senna driving." You know, because there's not a lot of footage of him driving anything else besides a Formula One car, right? He's driving a stock NSX Type R. And we were kind of like...
In loafers and white socks. And, don't bury the lead, Taro. In fucking loafers and white socks.
Right,
the
right.
White socks. Pull it up. Yeah. Zach's got it ready. He's got the white socks pulled up.
Exactly. We can't play it, but...
We can't play it, but we can show you the freeze frame of the white socks.
Yeah, see, it's if you can see this, it's shot completely like Best Motoring.
Yeah.
We did all the camera work and shot this thing.
It's one of the best driving videos of all time, honestly, because of what you said. There's so few videos of him driving anything else, not to mention camera on his feet, camera on tack. I mean, I learned to heel toe in that video. Frankly, what I used.
Yeah. No one, you know, used to put the camera on the feet, you know, only we're the only ones that ever did that.
How big was that camera? The foot camera.
It was like one of those small lipstick cameras.
Oh yeah, the little guy. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little guy, but it was connected to a recorder.
Yeah.
So,
you had like a giant refrigerator sized box in the trunk.
Exactly. You know, we had a big box. If you watch some of the Best Motoring, you see in the passenger seat, there's a big black box, and we covered up with black, with like a black piece of cloth.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be showing, but the video recorder was in the passenger seat the whole time, 'cause we didn't have, you know, GoPros back in the day.
You got to slate like 20 cameras together and record a tape. It's fucking gangster. Yeah. It's old school.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else you got?
Awesome. Trent Schaefer asked, Taro, what's your opinion on Infiniti? I guess in general, he was thinking about a 2012 G37, but I think he's just like, you have a lot of tuner car experience, Japanese car experience. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, that's kind of random, you know.
We have one more.
We get random,
but they're aimed at you. So,
okay. Well, I mean, they're Nissans. You know, I like Nissans. I mean, they're. I think it's a good brand. I mean, go for it. I mean, which model is he talking about? Has he said
G37.
They're very comfortable. There's something amazing though. Like what you said is totally true, but it's what Infiniti wants to get away from. Is like, well, they're Nissans, and it's like factually accurate, and you know. But Infiniti is like, damn it,
damn it, don't say that.
Yeah, exactly. Don't say that.
Maker of perfectly forgettable but otherwise fine vehicles.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I haven't driven a new Infiniti in a while. We should probably try and get a new Infiniti. I haven't driven whatever that red sport one, they have turbos now, right?
I drove that one in the dirt for drive last year. It's fast.
Is it?
It is. I mean, you get in it and you go, oh, I've seen this interior before several times. They haven't changed much in that front, but the engine is very strong. It's very quick.
We
and the all drive did a pretty good job. And I mean, they're very friendly. They were like, you're going to do what? You're going to drive it on a rally course? Absolutely. Here you go.
Sounds
very
good.
Very encouraging.
Yeah, we should call them and try and get one.
I like that.
Get
I like
a quarantine ride.
Last one for Taro is from Dylan Beauchat, and he says, are black top beam swaps from Altezas a special enough motor to be a worthwhile swap in an RA26 Celica GT liftback?
Whoa.
He recently blew a softball size hole in his engine.
Oh.
Can you break down
that's
that question? Do we need to back it up? Can you break that down a little
time.
Bit?
He blew his motor. He has an RA26 Celica GT liftback.
Okay.
Popped the motor. Needs a new motor, and he's looking at an engine from an Altezza IS300. Is that special enough for the car it's going into, or would you do something else?
Oh, is that special enough?
Which is what's a liftback Celica? Is that a like an old like 70s, 80s?
It's the boxy one.
How old are we talking about?
Is that like the
oh, it's that one. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. It's like
it's a 23.
70s? It's 70s. Wow, an IS300 engine in a 70s Celica would be badass. I mean, it would be that would be cool. It'd be kind of like an old like Hakosuka kind of, right?
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
I think that engine would be plenty special in a fucking old ass Celica. That'd be cool.
And the engine would work.
It'd probably work.
Which is what you want.
First gen IS300s have really aged well, haven't they?
Yeah, I still want one.
There's some.
Yeah.
There's none left. But they're fucking nice, man.
They're all pretty haggard that are left or expensive, and they have bad gas mileage and low horsepower, which is why I didn't buy one.
It's a good combination.
It's the combination that really
that's
sets it off. But that's it for questions.
I'd go for the swap, though. I would go for the swap. Yeah.
Taro, we got a bunch of like other random like consumer advice questions, which we'll go to, but we don't need to waste your time on those. We can send you on your way. But this is the benefit of fucking Zoom. You don't have to linger for the bullshit. What do you want to plug other than GT channel on YouTube? What do you want to plug?
Well, find us on YouTube, GT channel, and gtchannel.com. But mostly go to our YouTube channel, GT channel.
Like and subscribe, people. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, please. And we have an exciting network too. It used to be the GT Channel Creator Network. Now we're just calling it Creator Formula. We are working with a technology group that is part of our company now. And you know, these guys are really smart guys. And you know, Matt, I explained to you a little bit about what we're doing over there, but it's so advanced, to be honest with you, that half the time when these guys are speaking to me, I really don't even understand what they're saying. But it's like, Taro, you go and keep on making content. Our technology, we're going to use AI to flush your content through this pipeline, and we're going to mark up all of your videos, and your videos are going to be able to, we're going to be able to link your videos just like the rest of the internet. So I was like, well, that means that I can put e-commerce links or links to my channel or links to my friend's channel or links to products that appear in the videos, all in the videos. So
yeah, basically it recognizes things in the video. And you can link, like, if you put correct me if I'm wrong, Tara. I remember this from the call last week. If you have an AEM intake in your engine bay,
yeah,
and you show a shot of the engine bay, the viewer could click on the fucking intake in your engine bay and go to the e-commerce site.
Whoa,
is that correct, Tara? I think that's about right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And the software spots the stuff. Somehow.
Yeah. The AI does this video recognition and it can recognize. So if we went and
facial recognition is used for tuner parts.
I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it.
It would take forever, right? If we did it manually, but the AI does it for you. So that's the beauty of it. And we're testing it out on GT Channel, but all of our creators and our creator formula are in our network. We'll be able to test this out pretty soon. So we're really excited about that. So also, you know, find us, you know, create a formula and, you know, take advantage of this new technology that we're developing.
Sounds interesting. Check it all out at GT Channel. Thanks, Taro. I really appreciate your time. And
thanks, guys.
We need to figure out how to pitch Best Motoring to somebody. Someone that needs to fucking make it. And I think we probably need to start with the insurance company.
Maybe we need to get an insurance company on board, but yeah.
I'm tight with Haggerty. Maybe they'll survival. You think Haggerty wants to roll those dice? That would be amazing. What if Best Motoring is brought to you by fucking Haggerty? That would be amazing.
Would be amazing. Brought to you by Haggerty.
It would be sick.
If it's anybody to insure it, it would be those guys, right?
I know. They like to have fun. They do. Those guys they're interested. I'm going to call them. They're interested in weird shit.
Between all the guys that we know, there's got to be someone that wants,
I'm sure people want to do it. I think the hardest part is going to be the insurance. And I think the second hardest part is going to be the manufacturers. I think that's going to be finding manufacturers that are going to let you wheel to wheel race their cars is going to be very hard.
Do that. Yeah. Maybe it was just the 90s thing.
I know, I guess. There's lawyers. There's way more lawyers now. A lot more lawsuits.
Yeah. Too many lawyers.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming down, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Happy quarantine.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Wear your masks.
See you later.
Thanks, Taro.
All right. Bye.
For the rest of you folks who have car questions for us, thanks, Taro. I like this. Now we're doing the partial guest. See, that's cool. So now we can get kind of best of both worlds. Maybe we can get a thing going in the future where guests call in like mid show, or that might be something that makes Zach have a panic attack while producing. I'm not really sure.
I think it would work if they join the same meeting. I think it'd be okay.
The technology seems really cool that Taro was just talking about, except all you need is like the CHP to get a fucking phone with that technology and go pop your hood, bro, and then just wave the phone over and it goes ding. Oh, you've got fucking no cats, huh? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive that it can just look at a frame though and just like pick stuff out.
When he told me that shit, I was like, get the fuck out of here! No, you can't. And they said. He's like, he said, I mean, they said obviously it's not perfect, but like that's the business that they've got is to do that. I mean, I don't know. It's if it works just for your face to unlock your phone, right? It's got to be able to recognize something.
That's true. And it's actually, there's far fewer intakes in the world than there are people. Depending on if you have to program them all in or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I remember when they first started doing the face recognition and all Asians could unlock every iPhone.
Yeah, that was a big PR problem.
That was a big racism
that was
problem.
Really interesting.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the people and fucking take off the tight, Zach. I can't look at me anymore. Thank you.
Someone said $5 for Ben Chen's dead Porsche.
Oh, I had that on my list.
Yeah.
I wrote at the top of my list today, Ben Chen fucked up. Here's a dude whose name I don't really speak very often because I don't think he deserves it because I don't think he's a nice person. I've never met him. Everything I've ever heard about him, and I mean everything, is bad. Everything I've heard about him, and not just cars, is bad. He had a fucking rough day yesterday. Like 5 blocks from his own crib in New York City, trashed a Carrera GT modified by Gimbala. He fucking smashed it into a van at high speed on 11th Avenue, destroyed the whole front half of the car. And then with a million people around filming him, attempted to drive out of it.
Yeah, that was very, and it was, there were cops like,
all
like he got out
place.
Of the car and talked to them and he got back in and then started and tried to go like, I mean, his mental space there is not on point.
Cocaine is a hell
like,
of a drug.
Yeah. I don't know if he's drunk or something's going on, but the hubris was impressive.
Yeah. And someone doesn't hear no a lot.
I am impressed the car started again. I mean, you look at the front of this thing and it is ready to be salvaged and it started. I mean, he drove away from one location down the street with like one of the rear wheels was cocked at 45 degree angle and it like left the scene, which it didn't look like it could do.
It does say something for the reliability of the Carrera GT.
And the mid-engine.
Although, he lost all of his coolant from the front radiator. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, wouldn't be able to do laps.
You wouldn't make it very far, but he made it like 6 blocks.
I mean, this is just, it's destroyed.
And he had totally that guy destroyed. Has written off, that I know of, 3 supercars. That picture you've got there, that is a what I call another unforced error. He fucking sailed this thing. We pulled this up back in 2013. We pulled up the Google Maps link. He was driving on a Gold Rush rally in a rented McLaren 12C Spyder and exited the road deep into the triple digits and hit like a self-storage place. We pulled up the location on Google Maps. The storage unit was like 200 yards away from the highway. He fucking sailed that thing so far off the road. It was amazing. And he also trashed a Murcielago SV after he was denied entry into a Cars and Coffee in LA in Woodland Hills because he was driving like a dick. And then he left in a huff and decided to fucking take out his aggro in the car as he left in a huff and crashed it. So he's like really good at driving. That's my point. Charged with drugged driving, says
update
the drive.
From today, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cocaine is a hell of a drug. I'm not sure exactly what drugs he was on, but I'm betting coke is one of them. Crashing your Carrera GT and trying to drive it out is about the cokiest thing I could think of.
It's confidence powder.
It's extremely cocaine.
What I have observed in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People that can't put their shoes on are like, I'm going to start a business. And a band tonight. You're like, you aren't starting anything.
Guys, coronavirus is fucking keeping people inside. I know what we do. Let's do standing miles down 11th Avenue. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the roads are empty. But if four guys went out and just like street drifted and it was, you know, shot it and they did it well, didn't hit anybody, like we'd all be sharing that video because it'd be cool.
It's
but
a
this,
fine line between clever and stupid.
Between, you know, glory and defeat, right? Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Such a bummer.
I mean, dude.
So nice.
I mean, look. Affluenza. That's 100% affluenza. Remember that kid in Texas who never had a consequence in his life? This is where you end up.
Well, it's I can't remember who did it once, but it was the math of like a Lamborghini to a billionaire is like a T-shirt to me.
Oh, me, I did that.
You know,
math
if
to you
actually and it's like no, really
yeah,
like
yeah.
the percentage
the
of their the scale, which is an interesting thing. To see, it's like, you know, today I donated a T-shirt that I'm never going to wear. It's like
right.
a shop shirt that someone gave me, which was cool. But I was like, I'm never going to wear this. This is
if you
it's
were
crazy.
A
it's
billionaire, you giving that shirt to somebody would be the same as someone giving you like a Lamborghini.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that math once, and I got very depressed about it. The economies of scale. It was someone else did did a similar version of that scaled math, which was like, how much is the difference between a million and a billion? And it's like, if you had a million seconds, it's like 13 days. And if you had a billion seconds, it's like 20 years. It's like 20 years. It's like a whole
That's
different.
A great way to look at it, yeah.
Yeah. A million seconds. What does that say? A million seconds.
A billion seconds is about 4 months shy of 32 years.
Yeah. And a million seconds is like 2 weeks. A million seconds is
11 and a half days.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a scale. 11 yeah. and a half days, 32 years.
And apropos of our current financial situation, a trillion seconds is 31,710 years. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, if you have so much money where money no longer has any value, that's how you treat. Oh, here's the video. Look at this. Boom!
I mean, for people listening, just go to Instagram and look up Broadway Auto NY, all one word. Security camera footage of, yeah.
It's
said
I mean,
Gamball
woo!
GT just slot. It's going straight across a road, point straight, loses it.
I think it real
hits a bump
hot
and just starts drifting, and then just drifts right into a parked minivan. Luckily, I don't think anyone was in it. And I'm amazed watching this. How look the minivan
Bro, the
moves
minivan.
Five car lengths,
yeah,
and it jumps in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a good lesson in just.
Here's a question for
accident.
You, Zach.
It's really bad.
Hypothetical situation. Do you think that minivan could have done 0 to 30 miles an hour faster under its own power or faster by being rear-ended by Ben Chen, coked out in a Carrera GT?
Well, there's no way it's getting out of the hole like that, Bob. I mean,
he does a wheelie.
It does.
The van does a wheelie.
The front wheels come off the ground. I really hope no one was in that van. But yeah, that's the fastest that van has ever accelerated. Jeez. I mean, the force of a car hitting another car. Because you don't. I don't know. We don't see it that often. If it's in a race car, like, you know, two NASCARs are going 200.
Yeah.
They kind of touch and slip. I mean, then the crashes can get really bad, but it's just, it's a more controlled environment. This is like.
Bro, hitting a parked car at 90.
God. Car is not slow.
Yeah.
No.
Those are the thoughts.
Take up bicycling.
Thoughts, question mark.
Give
up your license. Can't do it.
Let's see. What is the quietest daily driver for 15 grand? Miguel Flores asks.
Used LS400.
Correct. Oh, yeah. What is the CD of that car? What is the drag coefficient?
Low.
Like 29 or?
Two, on the twos. Yeah, it was low.
Like that's another piece of quiet people don't think about.
Also, they don't think about their tires.
Also, really true.
I mean, huge, huge spread between loud tires and quiet tires.
And it's both. It's like compound and width. Like
and tread pattern.
Mm-hmm. Like all those things matter a ton. Shout out to people that did English translation on Best Motoring.
Mm.
Thanks for making crazy good content in the crazy times. I thank you guys for your donations during these weird times.
Yes. Thank you for paying our rent monies during this time.
In our opinion, what is the most overlooked sports car from Laksha Pratap?
Audi TTRS. It's the best car nobody ever talks about. I fucking had a great time on that episode of Drive mobbing the TTRS. Even on the track, it was great on the track. So much fun. Very fast.
Yeah.
And extremely moddable, extremely durable when modded. That five-cylinder engine has a cool sound. And is very, very stout and robust.
Mm-hmm. That thing can make huge power.
Huge power. There's a guy in Venice who's got one. He's still driving around on no tags. It's painted chalk. He's driving around no tags, and it's got an APR license plate frame. He's running something hot because he's got the fucking super burble tune going with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that, you know, it's the five cylinder, so it's that real guttural down low. And this dude's fucking stunting this thing. He's real happy to be driving it. And when we did one lap of America, I was shocked at how fast this thing, the TTRSs were for their displacement, which in one lap of America, they divided 3 liters. And so it's a 2.5, which is good. But I think that's the best sports car nobody ever talks about. Zach, anything to add on that? What else is great that nobody really talks about? There's not a lot of secrets
great
out
thing,
there.
Yeah, great things are usually talked about. So that's what makes them great, usually.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the RS3 or the TTRS gets overlooked because the RS3 is its cousin.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the more practical one. And,
you know, offers very same
similar
thing.
It's a similar feel. But there is something about being in a coupe versus, I was just thinking about this, like, even if you were in a car that had the same chassis, same everything, if they could put you, you know, put some kind of, like, veil up that made you think you were in a coupe versus a four-door, it would feel more focused just because you wouldn't have as much light coming in and as much visibility. So I wonder if the TTRS
Well, that's why they're doing the four-door coupes.
Oh, good, yeah.
That's the thing.
Hey, you can have your cake and eat it, too.
That's the thing. And the coupe SUVs.
All right. Thojo says, what percent of the E36 M3 experience can I get from a, quote, regular 328i? And then, what percent of NSX experience can I get from a Prelude or Integra? I mean, on the second one, I'd say turning the key can be very similar, and maybe the chimes.
Yeah.
And a couple of the switches, that's about it.
Shifter feel. Good shifter feel you could get. I mean, you know, a Honda engine's, you know, a really nice, well-tuned Honda Civic engine is a lovely thing and stands on its own merits. I mean, it's not an NSX, but, like, I've driven five or six really good Civics that are cheap, $5,000, $7,000, not expensive.
Yeah.
Great high-revving motor, double wishbone suspension, decent set of shocks, lightweight wheels, decent tires, and you're there. So you can it's not an NSX, but it got that intakey Honda sound, in good inputs and good ride quality. And so you can get some of the way there. And as far as the BMW thing, 20 years down the line, a lot of the way there, 20 years down the line, the difference between an M3 and a 328 is a lot less than it was when those were brand new cars.
That's true. Yeah. You can get a new one and just boost it. You know, turn the wick up with an E36, you'll feel the difference in the engine. But I told him just get an E46 325, and that has like the same power as the E36 M3.
Yeah.
It's a little heavier, but I feel like that's the closer comparison.
If you can afford an E46, 325, 8, or 30, it's a much nicer car.
That will be a cheaper car than an E36 M3, because everyone who has an E36 M3 is trying to ride the bring a trailer enthusiast.
The wave?
Sure. That's why I moved up to E46, because the good E36s were like $9,000 for an engine that is like,
yeah.
And then you could jump to a 46 for like 11.
Yeah.
But so at the lower stage, way cheaper.
Yeah. Also, a really nice E30 is better than a middle of the road E36.
Oh, yeah.
Like a 325 IS that's in pretty good shape. That's a really nice thing.
It is.
Yeah.
And the build quality is higher.
Yeah.
I think. What food do we miss eating since the quarantine?
It's not so much the food, because we can get a lot of things delivered, and I'm a good cook. I miss actually going to restaurants and so being in a big in groups of people, realizing there's people outside our fucking house.
You know? I miss a little bit not having to do the cooking cleaning. Like, I've done that for a couple weeks, and like I'm enjoying. It's kind of meditative in a way, like to get away from my work day. But at a certain point, I just want to like sit down and have someone bring the thing.
I'm cooking like 5 nights a week, so because it's either cook or order. It's not like cook or go out, and there's not a lot of really. I mean, there are some, but not a lot of healthy options for ordering. So we're trying to do that. But there's some real good places that deliver though in our area. I'll be honest, it's not been food wise. It's not been a huge sacrifice.
Yeah, we haven't had that yet. I hear JF said in New York, like grocery stores are down to bare essentials.
Really?
I sent him a photo. I was like, hey, man, you should get a basil plant because I got one for $2. It's cheaper than buying fresh basil in the package.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's like a cool thing to have in your kitchen counter. And he's like, you don't understand. So, you know.
I learned recycling the green onions a couple weeks ago, which has worked out really well.
What do you mean?
If you buy green onions, you cut them.
Yeah.
And now the bulb parts at the bottom that you don't use, stick them in a glass of water, put them on the windowsill. They'll grow again.
No shit.
They regenerate.
Whoa. Yeah.
Apparently, low-income people have known about this for a very long time, and dumb assholes like me are just figuring it out. Yeah.
Do you need more nutrients like soil or no?
You need a water in a glass.
That's awesome.
And they just keep growing.
That is fantastic.
Not indefinitely, but you get at least two more rounds of them.
Two rounds?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, you do.
All right, I'm into this. I'll give this a shot. Dante Casale says, if Hollywood remade American Gigolo today, would Jillian still drive a Benz SL to attract LA women, or would it be an SUV today? I don't think I ever saw that movie.
I have never seen American Gigolo. I'm sorry. I'm trying to make a list. I'll write it down. I'm trying to make a list of movies I've never seen that I'm kind of embarrassed that I have never seen. I watched Taxi Driver. I had never seen Taxi Driver, believe it or not.
Well, if you have, yeah, it feels like it's 4 hours long.
It does feel like it's 4 hours long. It's not as slow as some other movies from the 70s. Jodie Foster was very good. I was impressed with her.
She's very good, yeah.
She was very good. And I really enjoyed Harvey Keitel's character, the pimp.
Oh,
he was hilarious.
He's good.
I thought De Niro's performance was eh.
I mean, it was 50 years ago.
Yeah,
like,
overrated.
He was still learning, I think. I think Jodie Foster had to be interviewed by a psychiatrist to get that role because it was so, like, adult, and she was, like, 14 when she played it. And they had to, like, interview her and be like, this is, and they said she passed with flying colors. Like,
she was good. Yeah. American Gigolo. I'll add it to the list.
Richard Gere, he's the highest paid lover in Beverly Hills.
Mm.
He leaves women, what does that say? Feeling more alive than they've ever felt before, except one.
So is that the name of his character who drives a Mercedes SL?
I think
SL?
His character is Jillian, and apparently drives a Mercedes-Benz. I mean,
Today? I think an SL or an AMG GT would still work today. I don't necessarily think his character would drive a crossover. I haven't seen the movie. Is he particularly douchey? I picture crossover drivers, like sport crossover drivers, as pretty much the douchiest of the douche.
I think what they're saying, I think his car, this SL, is like, that's how good he is at fucking and being company, is he can have the SL drop top. You know, he can afford that, which everyone else in LA is like an agent or a lawyer, and they have the same car, and he's like, my dick gets me that car.
I think he'd drive a Tesla.
I think you're right.
With a white interior.
Oh, God. Well, yes, it would show stains less than
and
black.
It would have
interior.
Some fucking terrible license plate on it that's something involving no non-use of gas.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a Tesla. What's the best place to find Best Motoring? We covered that.
I saw a Model 3 on the street yesterday, and the license plate was to Mars. T-O space M-A-R-S. I wanted to fucking slash the tires.
Unless you are flying to work in a very large helicopter, you are not going to Mars. But I mean, whatever. I think it's cool that there is a competition for the space program, but some people get a little excited. Yeah. I don't know why when I go on Twitter and I go to like searched for you, it brings me to Teslarati, and I didn't know that was a thing. And it's the fan community of Tesla,
mm-hmm.
and their tweets are like aggressively supportive.
Oh yeah, it's
like,
weird.
It's really weird.
It's really
the cars
strange.
Are nice.
Yeah,
you know, depending on the model, but like I've just never seen
it's a cult.
Such chanting.
It's
like
a cult.
Rah, rah. It's very
yeah,
weird.
It's a cult.
Just like the car or don't like the car.
It's like it's very Trumpy. It's
most expensive car crash from Best Motoring.
Oops.
I can't remember seeing one. That question wasn't up when he was here,
yeah.
but I think they were.
I don't know.
At least
I
on camera,
they
were pretty careful.
I do remember a couple little ding-ups, but I don't remember any huge crashes in Best Motoring.
Carl Vogel says, do you have a favorite use of schmaltz? He roasted some chicken thighs and mm-hmm. saved it all because he's hungry and bored.
Yes, I do, sir. It goes in the matzo balls. Make yourself a matzo ball soup. And when you're making the matzo balls, which involve eggs, if you have a KitchenAid mixer, this is the best way to do it. Whip the egg whites into like a super meringue, and then you put them back with the yolks, and then you add the schmaltz, and then you make the matzo balls. Fucking next level.
What is schmaltz?
Schmaltz is chicken fat.
Got it.
Yeah, chicken fat. From when you like, if you roast the chicken, it's like the drippings.
Yeah, the drippings.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
So I'm going to do on my food Instagram plan, I'm going to make Carl's, Chef Carl's matzo ball soup, which is really, really hard to make. It takes all day. It's so involved. It's so messy. It uses every dish in my fucking kitchen. It's the kind of dish that you make when you have slaves in the corner to wash all your dishes. You don't want to make it. You have to wash your own dishes. It's really difficult to make. And I'll make it and use the schmaltz for that. Speaking of Carl, very sad news if you hadn't heard. Vic Henley passed away over the weekend. Vic was a comic. He was one of Carl's best friends.
Oh, wow.
He opened for Ron White a bunch. He's a really talented comedian. I was on Opie podcast with him a couple times.
Oh, right.
From Alabama.
Yeah.
He ate all the fucking edibles I brought in New
right,
York.
Right, right.
He was cutting them out of the tin. Oh,
you guys did like a New York street show sort
yeah.
of thing, right?
Oh my God. He was just one of the funniest fucking people. It was so sad that he passed away over the weekend. He had like a blood clot or something.
Oh my
it was
God.
Not coronavirus related or anything, but you know, Opie, this guy is fucking crushed, obviously, because, you know, to lose Carl last year and now Vic and fucking, oh, poor guy.
Wow.
But RIP Vic Henley, we fucking love you, buddy. Sorry. Super
no, it's okay.
Down,
I was,
super
I was
downer,
his page, but there's not enough time. Brandon Martinelli says, how often, if at all, have we seen or experienced racism in the car business?
I mean, like overt? So I don't know. I mean, I haven't, oh, there you go. I haven't personally seen any like overt racism. Now, I have been told by, you know, I've heard that, like, okay, it's difficult for people of color to break into the car media business. I've heard that. Someone once criticized me for not hiring people of color, even though the only person I've ever hired is sitting in this room right now.
Framed a different way, Matt, 100% of your hires are white.
I haven't. I've personally witnessed far more sexism in this business.
Yeah.
People are really terrible towards women in general.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty bad stories from various female writers.
I've heard that a lot more. I think I told the story the most. I don't want to say the most racist thing I saw, but like, I went to a car show and it was in Orange County and it was all fucking supercars and, you know, it's in tuner cars and a bunch of different stuff. And it's kind of, Orange County's a nice area. I saw there was one black person there and I watched a cop make him pop his hood. Not maliciously. It was under the guise that he was curious about the car, but the black kid, who was a young kid, was driving his shop. Like, he worked for a shop. He brought the shop car to the car show. It's not his car, it's a shop right. car. And the cop made him pop his hood in front of me, and I told the kid in front of the cop not to pop his hood. I was like, don't do that. Fuck, hell no. I was like, you don't trust that guy. You know what I mean? It turned out fine, but like, that was the most like, oh, this guy of all, everyone here, Montana tags on the Sennas and all this shit, and you're going to make this dude pop his hood on his E30. I was like, that's a little, granted, that's not particularly egregious in the grand scheme of racism, but it was enough for me to be like, ooh.
It's something you'd have to question. You're like, the cop could have an E30 and be interested, but he also could be very smart and clever and getting someone to pop their hood so that he can write a ticket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't know which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
In general, though, the sexism is more than the racism. But I mean, at press launches, like, it's a lot of white dudes.
Yeah.
It is a lot of white dudes. Why is it a lot of white dudes? I don't really know. I do know that it's very, 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 very hard to get into this business at all if you don't have some kind of economic security. It just is. And I think there's probably fewer minorities than white folks that have the economic security, not necessarily that you have to lean on, but it's a risky business, and you know, that's it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
Greg Howard says he just finished Lexus Pursuit of Perfection.
Oh, the book.
He heard you mention it on an old podcast. Any more automotive book recommendations? He's already read Go Like Hell and he liked it.
Yeah, Go Like Hell and Arsenal of Democracy by A.J. Bame are both great. If you haven't read Enzo Ferrari's biography by Brock Yates, that's interesting. Also, Cannonball, of course, by Brock Yates is great.
Alex's book, Driver.
Alex's book,
good.
The Driver, Cannonball is very good.
Oh, what's P.J. O'Rourke?
P.J. O'Rourke.
That book's great. Drive Like Crazy.
Driving Like Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, that's a good one, too.
Because that's a bunch of stories of just things he did with cars. So it's like, it's not one kind of theme, but man, like his story, his telling of how he went and explored Baja, you're just like, no one has a spine now.
And also, you know, our friends, Ryan Zumalin, his book, Slow Car Fast is out. You might want to check that out.
It's about and
millennial car culture. Blake Wrong's coffee table book is out. What? Someone else writes
Niedermeyer's.
Something? Niedermeyer's. Oh, Ed Niedermeyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other two, if you want a little more, current events, kind of Ed Niedermeyer's book Ludicrous about Tesla is really good. And also, I'm blanking on who wrote it, but there's a book called Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber, which is about how Uber was created and came to be what it is now, and also tangentially related to cars and fairly interesting.
Right on.
Right now I'm reading Sapiens, which Zach gave me. You gave me for my birthday 2 years ago, and I've been staring at it for a while. It's like 600 pages.
Yes.
It's a fucking...
It's dense.
It's dense, and I really only read when I travel, and it's so heavy, I don't want to carry it, but now I'm reading at home again. So I'm like 100 pages into it, and I really like it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I wish I read it earlier, but I'm enjoying it now. Yeah.
It's a good time to read it.
It is a good time to read it. It's like a kilogram. It's really heavy.
I had it on Kindle and I went camping. I was like out, away from everything, and then reading about human evolution and how we like killed animals. And it was just a really weird contrast to be reading that and going, I've kind of gone backwards now. Big Johnson Bikes says, wow, I bet the t-shirts your shop makes are just ridiculous. I don't even know if you have a shop. He says, thanks for being healthy and dieting, but not pushing it on us like a jerk.
And I don't give a fuck what you do. I'm doing me.
Yeah. Just do what you
I'm
want.
I'm not dieting, by the way. I'm just working out every day because I'm not traveling. The irony, I've lost some weight. I'm in pretty decent shape for me. But the irony of me, people were very nice to me the other day when I put up the t-shirt picture, because we got our t-shirts for sale on Blipshift. And I guess I looked kind of thin in the picture. It's a good picture of me. I look thin for me.
Mm-hmm.
And people were very nice to me about that. And I appreciate that. I'm not doing anything, though. I'm literally just cooking my own food at home, which is healthier than restaurants. I've learned why I think that is too.
Why?
Because I don't cook particularly healthy. My cooking is in the
Correct.
Middle. But we don't get appetizers.
Right.
We don't get desserts. You know what I mean? I just cook a main course and a side, and that's it. And less drinking.
Great point. Because you don't have a menu to look at.
Yeah.
Like, how much work do I want to put in?
Yeah.
And if you're gonna have an appetizer, it's like, what do we have? Some cheese I can munch on, and you're not gonna like indulge because you're getting offered all these different
yeah.
things to draw your attention.
And I like, you know, we're always going to new restaurants, so I want to try some shit. You know what I mean? Bring it out. What do you got? What can you do? You know.
Yeah.
But so no apps is an easy cutout, and I'm fucking bored. So I'm doing 7 days a week at the gym.
Just doing all the cardio.
I'm doing cardio 7 days a week, and one of the only people I'm allowing in my house is my trainer, who's been coming. He's been coming in my house the whole time. And so I make him wash his hands, and I clean all the fucking gear, all the bullshit. But it's just a ton of exercise because I got a lot of free time.
Yeah, Micah Diaz put up a poll on Instagram that was like, are you going to be healthier after quarantine ends or less healthy? And it was very interesting to see the different numbers. And most people are going less
because
they're like sitting at home, which they're not used to. I mean, people are probably moving less because even like those little walks in an office to the bathroom, maybe get coffee and stuff like that kind of is worth something. So it just depends on how sedentary you're being.
We're forcing
it. I think
it.
The food is different.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Yeah, not eating out is probably much better for most people.
Totally, yeah. And Hannah and I are forcing it. Like, yeah, she's not walking around an office or whatever, but like in the morning, we take like a 3-mile walk on the beach, and then in the afternoon, I do cardio and gym, and so I think it's evening out. I am losing weight in quarantine. I'm not gaining weight, which is nice.
If
I went to prison, I would definitely just be doing push-ups and shit in my cell the whole fucking time.
I would do so many steroids before I went to jail.
I would come out of jail fucking
immediately.
Jacked.
Yeah, I would be.
My spirit would be crushed, but I'd be strong.
Whew. Joseph Regan says, what's the best bourbon for less than $50 or maybe around 100? Thanks for keeping his Instagram full of delicious food.
I don't know where you buy it, but my favorite cheap bourbon to drink, and cheap is the wrong word, affordable bourbon to drink, is by Taconic Distillery. Maybe Zach can find a picture of it. It is their single barrel bourbon by Taconic Distillery. They're out of New York. A friend of mine is one of their head distillers, and he is a genius. And I drink this stuff. I get it out of New York, and I carry a couple bottles when I come home. Which is the one? I think it's the bottle on the left. This is straight bourbon whiskey. It's like $49-$50 a bottle. Great over rocks. Very, very drinkable. That's what I'm fucking with for just drinking and not being the kind of not like collector level. Yeah, Dutchess Private Reserve. That's it.
Oh, wow. You can ship now. It's $80.
Oh, what, $80? Wow, they've raised the prices a little bit. It's a little cheaper if you buy it in New York, I guess, than if you buy it on the internets.
Yeah. Well, he asked for $50 range and $100. I think.
Yeah.
I think. What's it called?
Blanton's.
Blanton's is like $60.
See, depends where you're going.
Depending where you go.
Blanton's is generally my favorite, but it's spiked recently with demand, I think. But that it's generally between $65 and $85 for Blanton's, which I really like as well.
I think there's some like, I don't know, like Monkey Shoulder and stuff that I think are, I can drink. They're all like small craft companies I see at the bar, and I've tried all, and they're all pretty good. They're not that expensive.
Yeah.
And they're all just like that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, I mean, bourbon is, you know, there's more bourbons than there's ever been right now. I mean, well, I can't say that definitively, but there's a fucking lot. So we'll get Johnny back on. Did I book it yet?
Yeah, I think he's next week.
I think I booked it, right? Next week we'll do Johnny Lieberman is...
The 16th.
Yes, the 16th, Johnny Lieberman will be here, and we'll talk about bourbon. Is that the game?
Is the game.
All righty. Well, right on time. That's 90 minutes fucking almost exactly.
Wow, yeah.
The right amount of questions. All right, folks. Well, that was a good show. We did an hour with Taro. 30 questions. I like it. We are back live Saturday, April 11th, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Alex Roy will be checking in from NoHo Sound on the East Coast. And then you can also mark your calendars. We got April 14th, Regular Car Reviews is on the show. April 16th, Johnny Lieberman is on the show. April 20th, Johnny Smith is on the show of Smith and Sniff from the UK.
Awesome.
And then April 23rd, it's actually going to be UK week, April 20th, because April 20th, we got Johnny Smith from England. And then April 23rd, we've got Ted Gashu calling in, who is quarantined on Damien Hirst's houseboat in the Thames River in London.
On the river?
Yeah, he's on the river. Look at, if you get his Instagram is Ted Gashu. G-U, yeah, that's the boat, right? Yeah, he's got a houseboat on the Thames. That's it. Yeah, and Ted's living on it.
What?
Yeah. It rules. Picture, it's all over his Instagram. It's
pictures
sick.
Aren't great. I'll find it. We had one late Super Chat come in, and the donation was worthy of just hitting. So this is Ryan Rask, and last question, everybody. His father-in-law is looking for a Florida car. Two people and two golf bags. He would prefer a manual. He wants an Aston, but will those fit two golf bags? CTSV six-speed wagon is also a strong contender. I mean, the answer to the question.
Hang on a second. Astons, two golf bags. Answer, some. The DB9s, and I think the newer second-gen Vanquish, current-gen DBS will. However, they're not manual. If you want a deep 09 to 11 DBS, I believe that will hold two golf bags in the trunk.
Great car. So sexy.
Very, very cool car. I also believe that the new, no, I manual, two golf bags, a lot of Corvette. There's a lot of Corvette. You can buy C7 Corvettes, leftovers for sure. Definitely manual gearboxes all over the place, big trunks.
Does he need to be able to carry people? Because like the cars he listed.
He said two people golf bags.
But then why would he want a CTSV wagon other than the fact that it's awesome?
Because they're fast and cool and awesome, right. I think. I mean, people have a problem with this, right? Asking with how they ask, because it's like, these two cars are awesome, right? But if you don't need to carry more people, you shouldn't get that big car. You know what I mean? Keep it small. Get the smallest car that you need for your task.
True.
Right? Because small is better. It's lighter. It's more fun. It's more agile. It's, you know, right? I think. Or maybe not.
Yeah, I think, how much bigger is a CTSV wagon than a DBS? Like,
I mean, it's
Astons
not
huge. Don't feel small.
No. Like even, well, it's because you sit down right. And look over the hood. You know what I mean? But the two golf bags, it really limits you, right? You're talking about, now you're talking about, you need GT style cars. Maybe an AMG GT, an Lexus LC500. These are not manual transmission cars, though.
LC500 would be very nice.
Yeah.
Not manual.
How about a GBS. Shelby GT 350? A Shelby GT 350's manual gearbox. A BMW M4 you can get with a manual gearbox. Yeah.
You can get M3, but you don't need that.
Higher at the higher end, though, it's tough to find those.
You should go Aston.
You could also go DBS, for used, like a Ferrari 612. Those are out there with manuals.
Get a 550.
Can get those.
Never look back.
550. I don't know about the trunk. I've never tried.
Doesn't matter. Golf is stupid. Just drive your 550 around.
Golf
back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
On the straightaways. That's all they have out there in Florida, but that'd be pretty sick. Oh, he said, thanks. He just parked. He has an F-150 and an Edge ST for a daily. I mean, all right, then an Aston would be a very nice change. Yeah.
Check your golf bags, but I think 2009 to 2011 DBS is the biggest trunk Aston Martin that you can get with a manual transmission.
I love someone said, take up disc golf and buy a C8, but you can do disc golf and you can buy anything.
You can fit a C8. You can fit a set of golf clubs in a C8. That's why it has a big Camaro butt.
But with it's almost like a pedestal flipped sideways. Yeah. It's got like a bell shape, and there's the golf bag groove.
Yeah,
in the back,
definitely.
That is the game.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next time. I already went through the schedule. That's what it's gonna be. Follow us on all the places. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Shirts on sale on Blipshift through April 16th, then they gone forever. Get them now. Bye.